Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the sound, it's John Boquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, Wednesday is Veterans Day, so we're opening our show this morning in honor and recognition of our service members past and present with an outreach specialist representing Connecticut's Vet Centers. We'll discuss the range of services provided to combat veterans and other programs to help support our heroes and their families 365 days a year across Connecticut. Then we'll air a very special visit with Anna Marquez Green and Jimmy Green, whose Anna Grace project is proving that love wins while honoring the daughter they lost at Sandy Hook Elementary School. We'll invite trauma responders, clergy, mental health professionals, educators, and others to a very special symposium being held in early December at Western Connecticut State University, being hosted in part by the Anna Grace Foundation. And since November is Epilepsy Awareness Month, we'll welcome Connecticut's epilepsy advocate and a representative of the LGS Foundation to discuss the unique challenges faced by individuals and families living with this pervasive type of epilepsy. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Boquette, right after this concert and other news for veterans. On Veterans Day, November 11th, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation and Till Duty is Done will host a hiring fair for veterans and military spouses ahead of Vets Rock, an evening concert which features Trace Adkins and special guests Dropkick Murphys and Madison Rising and Master of Ceremonies Tony Orlando at Mohegan Sun in Uncasville. More than 75 employers are expected to participate with jobs available for veterans and military spouses of all ranks and levels of experience. Hiring our heroes is a nationwide initiative to help vets, transitioning service members, and military spouses find meaningful employment. Walk-in vet job seekers must provide proof of service, or interested job seekers can pre-register online at hiringourheroes.org. Well, I came across a brand new friend a few months ago and said, why don't you guys come out on the radio program? And Gabe Kautzner has taken us up on that. And it is only appropriate as we head into this very special week with Veterans Day smack dab in the middle of it, Wednesday. Gabe Kautzner is here. He is an RCS1 counseling technician and outreach specialist with the Veterans Administration's Vet Centers. And we're here today to both introduce this area of veteran support for the very first time on the award-winning For the People, and also to give some background, a little bit of who they are, what they do, some of the services that are offered, and some of the things that Gabe and his associates with Vet Centers can do for you. If you are a veteran, family member, perhaps you'll want to stick around and stay tuned for this interview. So, Gabe, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
And so folks may be also familiar with you from a public access television program that you do?
Yes, I do a public access TV show called Sandbox Chronicles. It's with CTV out of New Haven, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. It's on the government channel. I believe it's 97. I do it live. Actually, I'm going to do it live today, Thursday. It's 3 to 4. And then every third Monday, I do it 3 to 4 also in the afternoon.
Excellent. So some folks that may have seen the show may be a little bit familiar with what we're going to be talking about. Maybe there'll be some new news for them as well. So let's before we talk about the contact number, let's talk a little bit about the VA and how the vet centers are kind of one piece of that big VA puzzle.
Well, the Vet Centers was a program that was established by Congress in 1979, recognizing that a significant number of Vietnam veterans were still experiencing readjustment counseling problems. Vet Centers are community-based, and it's a storefront-type community outreach center, which mm-hmm. means it looks like a normal building that you just walk into. Nothing medical, very little contact. You feel very, very comfortable.
Sure.
Usually when you do go into the waiting room, there's other veterans which make them feel very comfortable.
Yeah.
But we service all combat veterans. It goes from World War II right up to the war that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say it's a war. It's not a war. We're, you know, but...
Various military engagements.
Right. Anybody that was in engagement or, you know, even prior. I mean, we worked with a Vietnam vet that actually finished, you know, retired from Sikorsky.
Yeah.
Stopped, and then the PTSD hit him. That's why they call it post-traumatic stress disorder.
And I guess it can come decades later.
Right. Yeah, and it can. Now, my part of it is I do all the benefits. I do, I actually go out and I do casework, education. I'm embedded in all the colleges, community colleges. OASIS's were established by the state of Connecticut so that veterans could go someplace where they could relax, talk with other veterans and feel at home while they're doing their homework and everything, and they help each other.
So once in a while, you're up in my hometown of Waterbury at the Naugatuck Valley Community College?
Yes, every Tuesday. Tuesday, I go up there. I spend about 4 hours, and then I do the same for Gateway Community College and then also for University in New Haven.
And now, do you have counterparts that serve your same outreach and counseling technician functions in, like, Hartford and out in Norwich and Eastern Connecticut?
Well, actually, what's great about the vet centers, the counselors themselves are also in their job description supposed to do outreach. The thing is they have to counsel also. So probably like 80% of it is counseling, seeing veterans one-on-one to help them and doing the case management.
Can, right.
Mine is going out and spreading the word, trying to let people know that the vet center's there. The VA is there. They can be eligible for a lot of things that they don't even know. I mean, the one thing that I get from veterans the most is, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you had those services. Yeah. I didn't know I could do this.
Yeah, and our buddy Ted Obb says the same thing.
Right.
As he goes out there, it's kind of surprising and a little bit disappointing that the system doesn't do a better job at promoting itself.
Right,
and that to so many veterans are saying, I didn't know that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I can say to you, when I got deployed and I came back, I was up at Fort Drum, and they always do what they call a TAPS program. It's a transitional assistance program, and all different people come up to talk about it. You know, the Veterans Administration, and there's, you know, state. There's other entities that talk about all kinds of different benefits,
stuff.
Right?
Yep.
Problem is most of the men and women are fed up. They want to go home. They don't want to listen.
It's kind of like the last day of school.
Exactly.
Right, sure.
And that's one of the reasons they established the Yellow Ribbon program for a lot of the states is because when these men and women come back, they do a demobilization, then they do a 30, 60, 90, and 120 day review with them.
Okay.
And some of those are with their families, because one of the things the vet center does that the VA does not is we can actually counsel with the families. We actually have a licensed family therapist in every single vet center in the United States, and also in Connecticut, which we have one in Danbury, Hartford, Norwich, and also us, which is in New Haven.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say earlier, as you were talking about it, the cool thing about the vet centers that's different from something like the VA hospital is, you said they're very inconspicuous. And I think maybe what is a barrier to a certain segment of veterans is even giving the impression that they're either asking for or may have realized they need help. So going to somewhere with like bright, kind of like the equivalent of bright flashing lights, pointing arrows at them saying, here comes another one for help. They come to these really kind of low-key, inconspicuous, and very welcoming vet centers, and it helps them maybe shed that stigma feeling or shed that fear, and that's what is kind of appealing to me as a non-veteran is the idea that even the environment of the vet centers is encouraging them to get the services so they don't have to keep asking, saying, I didn't know that. So the other service that you guys offer is a toll-free number that anyone can call?
That is correct. It's 1-877-WAR-VETS or 1-877-927-8387. And it's an around-the-clock confidential call center where the combat veterans and their families can call to talk about military experience or other issues that are facing in a readjustment to civilian life. But this is the difference. The staff is comprised of combat veterans from several eras, as well as family members of combat veterans. And what's great is the service is completely free for combat veterans and their families. So they might find these resources they need at their nearest vet center.
And perhaps even with service peers from their own era of service.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the vet centers, they offer this wide range of services to veterans and their families in basically about 300 community-based vet center locations. Vet centers are across the U.S. and surrounding territories, including the U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Americas Samoa.
Great.
So we're out there.
Super. Gabe Kautzner is with us if you're just joining us this morning. We're celebrating and honoring veterans this Veterans Day coming up this week and opening the program with this important introduction, at least as far as our For the People goes, of vet centers here in Connecticut. Gabe is an RCS1 counseling technician and outreach specialist with the VA Vet Centers. And what I've got in my hand here is like three pages of the veterans who are eligible for vet center services. So probably is an easier question to answer. Is there any person who is alive who has served in the armed services or the war on terror who is not eligible for VA vet center services?
Well, most of the time, those that are non-combat are not eligible. We don't turn them away. We never turn away a veteran.
Right.
I mean, we will help them. We'll get them connected
sure. To
get services. One of the things that we run into, they lose their DD-214, which is their separation paper. We help them get that, and
then
we're able to help them. But what makes a difference for you to be a combat veteran, it has to be on the DD-214. It's an imminent danger area. You were in an imminent danger area.
Okay.
And then there's a couple of other little things that can be on there. It could be the Global War on Terror's Expeditionary Medal.
Yeah.
There's some other things.
But folks could call that 877-WAR-VETS number and determine immediately what level of service they might be qualified for.
And they also could go on to www.vetcenter.va.gov. /.
Plenty of places that they can go before they even get started.
Right.
In the last 5 or 6 minutes that we have with you, Gabe, let's transition to this wide range of services available, starting out with bereavement counseling, which we'll just briefly touch upon.
Mm-hmm. Well, bereavement counseling is offered to parents, siblings, spouses, and children of the armed forces who died in service of our country. Also, they are eligible are family members of reservists and National Guardsmen who die while on federally activated duty. What I mean by that is, yes, they're activated to go to war, but they also can be at AT, which is annual training, because, believe it or not, that's paid by the government, and they're activated by the government for 2 weeks once a year.
But they could be activated on base and not yet deployed and sadly maybe get killed in a motor vehicle accident or something,
right.
And those family members can get those services.
And the thing is the vet centers, they do bend the rules a little bit.
Sure.
It just depends on what the situation is, because we're there for the veteran.
Right.
We're not going to look at it as black and white and turn somebody away.
You're going to do everything possible.
Everything
with
possible
everybody who calls.
That can be done.
Yeah.
We will do.
Great. One of the other things that we talk about on this program a lot, and that I see is supported and addressed by vet centers, is sexual trauma and harassment counseling. Let's get into a little bit of that element of service and support.
Well, it's funny because sexual trauma has been such a taboo in the military for such a long time. And veterans of both sexes, and I really mean this, both male and female, All eras, Vet Center services include individual readjustment counseling and also the referral of benefits assistance, group readjustment counseling, and also helping with the liaison for the community agencies. And our, of course, our family therapist who kind of works with the marital and family counseling and substance abuse information. I kind of help in the referral of job counseling and placement. And basically what it is it's sometimes it's very hard for people to really deal with it because it is a trauma. There's no doubt that it's a trauma. And that's what we're there to help with. Now, harassment counseling can almost be the same thing. You could be in the military and something happens and they're harassing you, and that might even lead to sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not really like a counselor.
Sure.
But that's about what it is from what I heard from them saying. So it's a very big thing.
And so this is all part. These are all part of the services that can be accessed through vet centers.
We have. We have a lot. We have a very good relationship with the VA Medical Center. Aaron Blatchley is the program manager for OEF, OIF, GWAT, Global War on Terrorism group. So I have a lot of connections.
Excellent. Before we wrap up, we want to remind people that aside from being able to call 877-WAR-VETS, that's 877-927-8387, they can also go to the website, and it's vetcenter.gov?
Right.
For any general information to determine eligibility for services or what services are offered and where vets or their loved ones can go to the centers here in Connecticut or anywhere within the sound of our voice, including some of the islands and territories of the United States. Lastly, before we go, Gabe, remind people that vet centers is not a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday thing.
Correct. Vet centers are actually open from 8 to 4:30, but we have groups at nights, which the hospital, the VA medical center sometimes cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have weekends. We can meet with the veterans on weekends if they are scheduled, and they can always call our office at 203-795-0148 and talk to Amy Radovoy to set up something where the veteran can come in. We also have a government car, and sometimes we go out to see the veteran. If they're immobilized and they can't really come to the vet center, we're willing to do that. And also, my outreach cell is 203-500-2129. I know this program, you're trying to put a lot of information into a little time, but if there's anybody out there that needs to call me and ask me a question, that would be great. Because the question you don't ask is the one that doesn't get answered. And I'm sure there's a lot of questions that veterans have.
Yes. As we indicated at the beginning of the program, one of the things you hear most frequently is that veterans didn't know that they were eligible for services. It's great to know that you, Gabe Kautzner, and the Connecticut Vet Centers stand ready along with their counterparts throughout the country and territories of the U.S. To serve and support veterans. Gabe Kautzner is an RCS1 counseling technician and outreach specialist here in Connecticut and working out of the greater New Haven area, and also hosting a public access television show on CTN, all tied to his work with Vet Center, Division of the Veterans Administration here. Once again, in honor of my late father, a World War II vet, and all the vets and families out there, past, present, and future, please rely on vet centers for their assistance. 877-WAR-VETS is the toll-free number. You can call from anywhere to find out about information, or vetcenter.gov. Gabe, thanks for being on the program. So
So as we mentioned in the introduction of the program this morning, we're welcomed into the home of Nelba and Jimmy Green here in Sandy Hook, and we're here to talk about the Anna Grace Project, which has is the Greens' initiative that emerged from this horrible tragedy that we experienced here in Sandy Hook. And in 2015, we are celebrating a fantastic event that they're going to be bringing into Western Connecticut State University's brand new and incredible Visual and Performing Arts Center. That's coming up on December 3rd. It's called the 2015 Love Wins Mental Health Conference, and we'll be talking about that in just a few minutes with Jimmy. But first, I'd like to go to Nelba Marquez Green to talk a little bit about how the Anna Grace Project took hold and is now really getting a lot of regional and national attention for the work you're doing. So, Nelba, thanks for having us here today. And give us a little bit of insight into how this kind of ramped up and really kind of started taking hold.
For sure. Thanks for giving us your time, John. I should give a little background and say that I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I've done that for quite a bit of time. So around the time of the Sandy Hook tragedy, that's what I was doing. I was functioning as a licensed marriage and family therapist and a part-time supervisor of master's level interns at Central Connecticut State University. I was also coordinating a psychiatric outpatient clinic for young adults and their families. So mental health has been a passion of mine for quite a bit of time. Immediately after the tragedy, and my husband and I both knew this was going to happen, we got into two major discussions. One was around gun control and responsibility, and the other was around mental health. But we were talking about mental illness. We weren't talking about anything on the prevention side. And even though my husband and I both took initiative in those spaces and took up some space in discussing these things that were really important and I still do believe needed to be talked about, we were missing one thing. And I really felt like we failed as a country to talk about the Lanza family and maybe how they got where they were at the time. And not a conversation about gun violence, not a conversation about major mental illness, but to talk about what those fundamental things are that can influence a family towards health or lack of it. A lot of work around prevention, community, and connection. And if you look at the Lanza family, they are a perfect example of systems that failed them.
So a lot of this information has been circulated in the media, but the bottom line is that it appears from all of the reporting that's been done that there were warning signs just past infanthood for that child.
Exactly. And Connecticut, although we are getting better, as a state, we really need to look at what the gaps are in our existing services. Are there places and spaces for parents who have children who, you know, may not be developing typically to go in and say, you know what, something is wrong and I need help? I know many, many parents, and I've heard from many of them who say, it is really, really hard to find people to call me back. It's really hard to find support. I struggle with a lot of stigma. I live in a community where if people found out, I'm afraid I'd be alienated. So this is really really important information to get out there because, as you said, there were many, many signs that could have saved not only Adam and Nancy's lives, but also the 26 people that were murdered on December 14th, 2012.
Broadening out the focus and incorporating some of the history and experiences that you had in your field of expertise prior to the tragedy in Sandy Hook, and taking into consideration that my last read on the statistics are well over half of the parents of children that may have autism spectrum concerns or other issues may in fact themselves have some semblance of an issue. Were you getting any kind of practical or anecdotal idea that a lot of the parents of children who are being stigmatized kind of went through their early lives without any type of support and perhaps under the same sort of onus, the bullying, the ostracizing.
Absolutely. And first of all, I want to be really clear that no report indicates that having a mental illness or a developmental issue like autism spectrum disorder will automatically predispose you to being violent. We know that the contrary is true. We know that most folks who have or suffer from a mental illness or a behavioral developmental disorder actually are victims of violence and not perpetrators of violence. But to get back to your question, absolutely, which is why connection and community are so important. We find that we are looking for the wrong things when it comes to predictors of violence. We are looking for, okay, you know, we know that this kid is making trouble in school. You know what? We found that kids who make trouble in school, at least people know who they are. It's really looking out and building a safety net for those students and families who might be isolated that might actually protect us a bit more from these violent incidents.
So how has the focus of the Anna Grace Project or the projects that you are taking on now and in the future, how has that sort of shifted to accommodate sort of this expanded or even maybe a renewed goal?
For sure. First of all, I do a lot of public speaking. I go nationally and internationally to talk to people about trauma and how trauma, in fact, it impacts everyone and can impact kids from all walks of life. A lot of times we start this narrative around, okay, we know which kids are needy, poor kids, you know, kids of color, kids whose parents are incarcerated. You know what? While that might be a population that needs extra care, so do kids in suburbs. So do kids who grow up in relative affluence, like many of our mass shooters, who are actually suffering from other things, because we know that material wealth doesn't take away the negative impact of relational poverty. And that's not my quote. That's actually the quote of Dr. Bruce Perry, who is our keynote for the December 3rd event. He's a really well-known neuropsychiatrist who talks a lot about trauma. What we are seeing, and this is what I talk to people about, is kids who are really just growing up without those important connections they need in order to make a difference in their lives. So they lack hope, they lack mentors, and they can also lack those healthy developmental building blocks in order to make good choices later, especially when they face stress. So we're seeing an increase in a generation of kids who have all kinds of things, material things, and lots of access to the internet and screen time, but a decrease in relational connections. And we don't have any idea right now the ramifications for that on our bodies and our brains.
And on top of that, I guess it's sad to say that no matter how many incredible toys you have or how big the house or how rich your family might be, kids are kids. And when you get down into that peer group interaction, if an individual has a social issue or is on the autism spectrum and is exhibiting some of the behavior associated with that, they're still going to be subject to that stigmatizing.
Absolutely. And I try to tell people when I go out talking that all children hurt the same. So if you're living in a mansion or in the projects and you go to school and school is painful because you don't fit in for whatever reason, maybe you're not that sports kid, or maybe you're not super distinguished in your academics or in your music, kids hurt the same, and that will impact them. So one way I talk about this is through public speaking and training of trauma. And then we have two initiatives. One is a professional development initiative, like we bring in speakers and we educate folks on trauma and other issues. And the other is in the classroom. We go around to classroom and train teachers on different things they can do that are practical, inexpensive, and not time-consuming in order for them to build classrooms that focus on social and emotional learning. And even little things they do, taking time in the morning to do a 10-minute check-in, ensuring that children know that there is a plan in the playground in case someone's being bullied, in case someone's being left out of a game, and a plan for parental engagement. I can't tell you how important the family piece is. You can connect to a child all you want, but if you don't connect to the family, then that's going to be difficult to continue. So we really, really want to make sure we talk to schools and communities about the importance of engaging whole families for children.
We'll be right back with the second half of our visit with Nelba Marquez Green and Jimmy Green talking about the Anna Grace Project right after this break. Stay with us.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, I'd like you to join me at the next CT Chip program being hosted by Hiram Lodge of Sandy Hook on Saturday, November 14th from 10 to 4 at the brand new Newtown Volunteer Ambulance Headquarters on Wasserman Way, just off Interstate 84 at Exit 11 on the Fairfield Hills campus in Newtown. CT Chip is a comprehensive child identification program designed to give families a measure of protection against the ever-increasing problem of missing children. Any parents wishing to participate in this free comprehensive service can come to Newtown November 14th and go home with their own complete Purple Packs ID package. For more information, call 914-482-3573 or come out to the CT Chip event and touch a truck November 14th at Newtown Volunteer Ambulance Headquarters.
If you're hearing something that resonates with you, your family, or maybe someone you know, friend, neighbor, coworker, you can visit AnnaGraceProject.org, AnnaGraceProject.org for that more information on the work that's being done by Nelba and Jimmy Green, who are welcoming us today for the program. And we'll give Nelba a little bit of a break and shift gears to talk about scholarship initiative, as well as this event that's coming into Western Connecticut State University on December 3rd. So as I move to my right, it's great to welcome Jimmy Green to the show, a renowned musician as well as a music educator at Western Connecticut State University and at other universities prior to his arrival here in Connecticut. Jimmy, thanks for having me at the house this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for sitting down with us.
So let's start with the scholarship project, and we'll wrap up inviting folks out to this great event. Tell me a little bit about some of your hopes for educating and assisting aspiring musicians of the next generation.
Well, music is it's an amazing vocation. It's an amazing way to spend your days and nights thinking of music and writing and performing it. And it's also a community. It's a communal expression. And when I was a youngster, I had the benefit of having some amazing musicians to mentor me and to kind of bring me into this world. Among them, chief among them, obviously, was Jackie McLean, who was one of the great saxophonists to ever play. And he was so giving of his time and his talent to not only me, but to so many aspiring musicians, that he really taught me, and others too. All the great musicians I've come in contact with over the years have always been so willing to give of themselves for the betterment of this art form that we love so much, because we all realize that's the only way it can keep going and progress, and is by sharing, you know. So I really feel passionately about education. I feel passionately about sharing music with youngsters. And in the exchange, I learn a lot too. It's never a one, the flow of information never goes from one direction. It always comes right, like always comes back. Yeah. So in that way, you know, the music that we love and play and develop continues to grow and progress in all of us. It's pretty special, sharing music. And I often tell students, and it was told to me when I was a student, that when you're on the bandstand, when you're performing with anybody, no matter if they're a master and you just started, you're equals, you know? Mm-hmm. You're all just trying to listen and to do your best to serve the music that's being made at the moment. And that's a really beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. that in the heat of the moment, there's really no hierarchy. There's only music.
Yeah. So what's the logistics of the scholarship plans?
Well, in the days after Anna was killed, I got several phone calls, emails, asking if there was some place to send money in lieu of flowers. Mm. And I had never, my mind was not there. I was in shock. I was just trying to function. But I thought a little bit about it, and Anna was a lot of things. A very gifted and talented musician was one of many things that she was. She loved to sing, and she sang very well, and she loved to be around music, and she always had music in her. She always had a song in her head. She was always humming or singing something. She loved to dance, too. Very talented in the arts. So Nelba and I felt that a great way to honor her life would be to somehow pay it forward to other youngsters who were pursuing their dreams in the arts. And what a better place to start than right here at Western, where I was at that time in my first semester of teaching. Hmm. After returning to Connecticut from living in Winnipeg, Manitoba, teaching at a university there for 3 years. Mm-hmm. The dean of the School of Visual and Performing Arts at the time, Dan Goble, I made a call to him in those early days, and he took care of everything else, basically. Between him and the Office of Institutional Advancement, they set up the scholarship fund, and people have been very, very generous in donating to it. And we've been able to offer five different young people a four-year renewable scholarship, partial scholarship, to mm-hmm. attend Western Connecticut State University to study music.
Excellent. And Western Connecticut State University is also going to be the host and the home of the 2015 Love Wins Mental Health Conference. It's coming up on December 3rd in this incredible new Visual and Performing Arts Center on the Westside campus. Tell us a little bit about that. And I know you have to be really excited and inspired that Dr. Bruce Perry is coming in to be your keynote.
Absolutely. Bruce is a wonderful person, and I'm not in the mental health field, but you know a good person when you meet one, and he's very warm and generous and giving of his time, and not only for his community, for the mental health community, but for everyone, for anyone who has been affected by trauma. He is an amazing resource and a wonderful human being to know. That being said, we're honored to have him, and to have him at WestCon is great. The new Visual Performing Arts Center is a beautiful facility, and the concert hall, which I get to step into, you know, almost on a daily basis, is just a magical, wonderful space. Mm. So it'll be nice to have those things converge, Bruce and this amazing mental health community that my wife has cultivated, and the place where I spend a lot of time these days.
So who is the ideal audience member, or who are among the groups that might be able to get the most benefit and pay the most forward post-conference?
That would probably be a question for Nelville.
Sure. Yeah. So we did this in 2013, and the audience were members from the government, members from the foster care community, members from the mental health community, from every discipline, social workers, marriage and family therapists, licensed professional counselors, psychologists and psychiatrists, folks who work in hospitals, folks who work in jails, folks, anyone who works with children and or families or rights policy or programming that affects and impacts children and families. The chief medical, anyone from the chief medical examiner to the folks who are on the ground doing direct service.
Preschool teachers.
You teachers. We had maybe, I think there were 18 different districts represented. This year, one district alone has purchased 68 seats for its administrators. So not only do we have Bruce, but our breakout sessions this year, we are able to ask national presenters. So we are covering topics such as school safety, from Columbine to Sandy Hook, traumatic loss and bereavement, building up communities after tragedy, the healthy development of men and boys, and beyond talk therapy. What else can we do beyond talk therapy? There's so many different therapies that can be used with children and families. And oftentimes we just think of therapy as, you know, sitting in this chair and having someone, you know, talk psychobabble at us. And there's so much more to it than that. So we have the structure of the day is in the beginning. Bruce does a keynote, and in the after we have lunch together as a community, and then in the afternoon you get to cycle through two breakout sessions. So you get to pick two sessions that work for you, and then we get back together as a community and have an end of day celebration. So it's a full day conference. You can find out more on the website, and there is still time to register. Although I know at last count, we had very limited spaces. And I know what usually happens, John. People call me like 2 or 3 or 4 days before and say, can I still get in?
Schedule's free up.
Yeah, Western is really strict with their fire code. So I know we are strictly limited to 350. Sure. And we are getting very close, even a month out. So we're excited.
So this bodes well for the next conference, putting a circuit breaker in to allow you to move into the O'Neill Center. Yeah. Perhaps into the stadium if this gets popular.
If it gets bigger, yeah. I can't tell you enough how amazing Western Connecticut State University and the community in Newtown, the collaborative group of folks working together, giving us a grant to scholarship folks most affected by Newtown, and Klingberg Family Centers, who I used to work for and then could not go back to my regular job running the outpatient clinic. They're handling registration. They are sending volunteers. This is really a labor of love. There's no way. I mean, Jimmy and I are here, and we will be here as Anna's mom and dad forever and ever. But there is no way you get up in the morning and do this without a team. And we are just so thankful for our team that helps us do this.
Well, I'm thankful for you helping us be able to tell the whole state of Connecticut all the great things that you're doing, and how this conference undoubtedly will domino into another and another, and perhaps get bigger, and perhaps even move outside of Connecticut and into other states and
communities. So many people have asked. They've said, can you come? Can you do? Oh, my gosh, I heard about your conference. Can you come to another state? And we just want to grow well. But grow slowly and well. We want to do this the right way. I'd love to, but at the end of the day, we're two parents trying to pull this together. So yes, if the infrastructure was there and we're working towards building that, we would love to take this show on the road.
Yeah. Well, I thank you two very special thank parents you. For having us do the program here today. Folks, once again, if by the time this airs, there are still seats available, it is the 2015 Love Wins Mental Health Conference, December 3rd at Western Connecticut State University. If by some chance it is already sold out, I'm sure many of the resources that are being passed on will eventually show up on the website, anagraceproject.org, ANAGRACE project.org is the website to go to learn about this, as well as all of the initiatives that are being headed up by Nelba and Jimmy Green. And we thank you guys for having us in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we opened up the program ahead of Veterans Day, celebrating our veterans with our friends from the Vet Service. And now we're going to wrap up the program here on this weekend in November, because it is Epilepsy Awareness Month. And much like November comes around every year, so does our good friend and now decade-long resource here in Connecticut. Bob Fiore is with us. He is the Epilepsy Advocate. You can visit his website or check him out on Facebook. If you'd like to learn more, you can go to ct-ea.org. Bob is the kind of quintessential catalyst for a grassroots initiative that he decided to start on his own, and it's now gaining resources all around the country and perhaps beyond. We'll find out about that in just a few moments. We'd also like to welcome for the first time Kelly Arango. She is with the Lennox Gastro Syndrome Foundation, the LGS Foundation. She is a state liaison for that nationwide organization and foundation. As we said, November is Epilepsy Awareness Month, and for those who may not be aware of what epilepsy is, it's identified as a seizure disorder, a disorder of the brain. A person is diagnosed with epilepsy when they've had two or more seizures. They are the main sign of epilepsy, although not the only sign of epilepsy. And so what we do is tap Bob every year to come in and talk a little bit about the resources that Epilepsy Advocate offers here in Connecticut and beyond. And he has always been, over the past few years, great at helping us network with other organizations. So we're glad to be learning more about the LGS Foundation. We'll talk to Kelly in just a few minutes. But, Bob, welcome back. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having us. 10 years. That's amazing.
I know. And as we were talking about, you not only has the Epilepsy Advocate Initiative grown in scope, but your situation has grown in scope as well. From the first couple of years when it was a little bit difficult to get in here, now these days you're running marathons and giving blood and doing all kinds of great, exciting things. And most importantly, networking with folks like Kelly and many others around the country to help bring cutting-edge information to folks and families who are dealing with epilepsy. So let's get a brief little elevator ride description of exactly what you do and what you offer, and then we'll meet Kelly.
Okay. The Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate is a recognized 501c3. We help people throughout the state of Connecticut living with epilepsy in any way we possibly can. And we also interact with great organizations like the LGS Foundation, Dravet Syndrome Foundation. It's just all working together for the same cause, helping people living with epilepsy.
So if folks go to your website, what types of resources or connect through it with your Facebook page or other social network opportunities, what are some of the things that they can learn by visiting ct-ea.org?
Well, the basic information is there as far as helping getting prescriptions, information about what epilepsy is and different jargon there. Mm-hmm. We also, on our information links page, it's extremely long, but it's broken down categorically so you can find other epilepsy-related organizations.
Excellent. And support and all types of prescription information as well, medical alert resources.
Yeah. We have a contractual agreement with Medical Alert Company, and it's the real deal. It's not one of these companies where you get a medical bracelet and your chimney swept. It's strictly for healthcare, Medical Alert bracelet.
Great. And we talked a little bit about social networking, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and also a public access television?
No, we stopped doing that because we've gotten so busy.
Oh, okay. Well, that's success is great.
Yep.
But still, YouTube resources long-standing.
Absolutely.
Excellent. You can get it all through ct-ea.org, but now we're going to enjoy the benefits of Mr. Fiore's networking by bringing Kelly Arango to the microphone. Kelly, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So, briefly, give us the kind of the breakdown of what Lennox-Gastaut syndrome is.
So Lennox-Gastaut syndrome is a severe form of epilepsy. It's a rare condition, and it debilitates the patient. There's global delays, and we have to deal with multiple seizure types on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
When you've met one patient with LGS, you've met one patient with LGS. Everyone's different, and it's very complex, and it's very rare, and this is why networking is so important and coming out and meeting other families and meeting other people that has dealt with the same issues.
So when I was talking with Bob about bringing you on the program and saying, you know, what's so special about Kelly Arango, he said you had a very unique and important story that you wanted to tell to help educate folks out there here during Epilepsy Awareness Month.
Yes. LGS, unfortunately, has touched my life. I have a beautiful daughter named Isabella, and she's 7 years old. She's going to be 8 years old the end of this month. She has LGS. She was diagnosed with LGS when she was 3 years old. It's been tough It's been a very hard road. We deal with multiple seizures on a daily basis. She's globally delayed. She's not able to walk or talk, but she is a joy to be with. Her smile lights up the room, and you know that she's happy when she smiles. But unfortunately, we've dealt with many medications that we failed, diets and other treatments that unfortunately haven't worked for us. So she has intractable epilepsy. And LGS Awareness Day was November 1st, which kicks off the month of November for epilepsy awareness. Yeah. Yep.
So in terms of LGS overall, are there any medical or alternative therapies that seem to be working for any percentage or a larger percentage of individuals with LGS?
Well, some individuals, 5% of the individuals can achieve seizure freedom, but that's just 5%. Mm. And like I said in the beginning, when you've met one patient with LGS, you've met one patient with LGS.
Yeah.
What works for me might not work for someone else. Yeah. And unfortunately for us, we haven't hit that magic bullet treatment,
whatever. Yeah.
Yes.
And so the therapies that give 5% of individuals with LGS seizure-free relief, do those same medications work in any way to reduce the level or intensity of seizures in others without delivering that seizure-free status?
They can. But at the same time, they can't. So it's different for every patient. So you don't know what you're going to get once you try a medication.
So it really sounds like LGS is one of the more or most challenging kind of elements of epilepsy.
It actually is, yes. And our foundation helps with funding, trying to find better treatments or hopefully a cure one day. I mean, that's my prayer.
Yeah.
Just so that we can help others dealing with this condition, just because it's so tough.
Hmm. Do you have any information you could share about research, where it's being done, how it's being done, any measure of successes that you're hearing about as you interact with other LGS Foundation members beyond Connecticut?
So we have some research going on, and you can go to the page and find everything that the LGS Foundation does. Mm-hmm. And we also have a chat room, and we also have success stories as well as stories that haven't been so successful, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And everything is at the LGS Foundation .org. And you just see, you know, from seizure freedom to sometimes more than 100 seizures a day. Mm. So it varies completely.
Is there any idea of what proportion of individuals with epilepsy are LGS specific?
1-4%.
Okay, so that's a relatively large number.
Yeah.
Considering.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hearing at all about any kind of breakthroughs or any kind of test situations that are ongoing, clinical studies or anything that are showing any promise?
Well, lately what we are hoping for is Charlotte's Web. I mean, it's been helpful for some patients.
Okay.
But like I said, not for others. But we would like to give it a try. Unfortunately, Charlotte's Web is not legal here in Connecticut yet for ages 18 and older.
Yeah.
And like I said, my daughter's only 7. So we are trying to get that approved.
Yeah.
It would be awesome to be able to try that since we've heard so many success stories from that.
And is the foundation working in many states like Connecticut that already have medical marijuana permission or accessibility to add the non-THC active cannabis oil to the range of therapies?
Well, we are not working directly with it, but we are waiting to see, you know, studies and what comes from that, and to have more of an educational, you know, so that they
outreach.
Can make an educational decision about it.
Sure, yeah. Robert.
The unique thing about cannabis oil here in Connecticut, there's 6 medical marijuana facilities here in Connecticut.
Dispensaries, yeah.
However, none of them offer the same THC level as Charlotte's Web. And when I contacted all 6 of them, the THC level is higher. And when you contact them, they don't know which one they have in stock. So it's literally potluck. The good thing about Charlotte's Web, it's manufactured in Colorado. They have their own quality
single
control.
Single source,
yeah. Highly, and then after that, an unknown quality control comes in. And if the two of them disagree, then that batch doesn't go out.
Right, right.
So and when it's locked in at 0.3%, you know what you're getting. Yeah. And as far as how helpful Charlotte's Web is, because it was named after her, she went from 1,200 seizures a month down to about 2 or 3 a month. Hmm. My friend down in Virginia, her daughter, by using it, went from 600 seizures a month to approximately 300. Hmm. Now, to me, you know, we can go on with those numbers, like sure. hearing the line from The Great Escape. How many people?
Exactly.
You know,
right, right.
Yeah. But I feel that that makes a valid point there. But we definitely need Charlotte's Web to be legal in Connecticut and have it shipped here. That's the difference.
With that controlled output. Good. Yeah. Well, we want to thank you guys for coming in today once again and wrapping up the program here. This first full weekend of Epilepsy Awareness Month in November. It was great to meet you, Kelly, and to hear about your situation and educate people about this, fairly prevalent issue of Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and the LGS Foundation. Folks, if you want to learn more about that, it's LGSFoundation.org, and our other guest, Bob Fiore, epilepsy advocate. You can access his website and the portal to all of his social networks and other resources through the website ct-ea.org. Folks, thanks for being with us today, and happy Epilepsy Awareness Month. Best of luck to both of you in your efforts to provide the necessary support and care for folks here in Connecticut and beyond dealing with epilepsy. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Vayette. I'm John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for another installment of the award-winning For the People. Or listen to this and other For the People podcasts under the podcast tab at our radio station website or on iTunes. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.